They tuck it away in one foot inside the five, and he's in for the Lions touchdown.
Barry Sanders turned around a defensive back about three times. Wow.
The guy is trying to tackle him, but he's got his back to Barry because he can't find him.
Here's a touchdown, Lions. Holy mackerel, what a run by Barry Sanders.
Detroit. There'll be a 15-yard penalty on the kickoff, but the play is not reviewable.
Welcome to another edition of the Roar of the Lions UK podcast, episode number 79. It's Groundhog Day again. My name's Matthew Turner. I'm joined by my co-host Ryan McCluskey, and soon to be joined by Ryan Farden when he finds out how to log on online. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm okay. I've kind of got over last night. I've swept it aside. Like I say, it was a very mixed bag. I feel like it was another roller coaster of emotions.
It was one I don't think the fans are going to get over anytime soon. But we will get on to Ravens at Lions in just a moment. Just going to kick off with a little bit of news to start off with. The Lions presented Megatron's Hall of Fame ring at halftime in this game, and Sheila Fordham got relentlessly booed. What are your thoughts on that, Ryan?
I wasn't surprised. That's why they don't often talk in public, because they don't like the reaction they get and the fans don't take too kindly to it.
Fools aren't exactly popular, are they?
No, they are. They're never going to be. I think the majority just want them to sell the team. I think people will be happy when they pack up shop. But like I said, standing by it, I don't see the Lions hitting the market anytime soon this decade. Like I say, they're pretty bullish in that way. They're determined to stick around, like I say, and try win the fans over. Like I say, Calvin didn't have to, but he looked like he was trying to at least appease or calm down the crowd. In the day, they were really small. He didn't like it. You could tell by what he was murmuring to his wife. Like I say, so it's spoiled what should have been a nice moment.
Yeah, I mean, I really felt for her, actually, because, you know, whatever the sins of her parents, she isn't them. And whatever you think about the Ford family, she isn't them. Like, you've got to judge her on her own merits like we do with all the players too. And I just don't think she deserved that. I mean, we've seen what the franchise system does in America versus what happens over here in the UK. But teams don't move. You don't have that risk unless you're Wimbledon FC and Milton Keynes Dons. I think it's the only example of it that I'm aware of over here where a team has actually physically moved location. But the big problem is that if a team is sold, I mean, the likelihood of the team being moved skyrockets. And, you know, are the fans really going to want that as the payoff for it?
Well, also that, but who would want us? Realistically, how many places are there? Because I don't see there being a long list of cities that are going to be welcome to winning and bringing in a franchise that has got questionable potential to bring in revenue to the city. Like I say, we're not worth a lot, like you say, capital-wise. It won't be a blockbuster sale. There's just going to be not that many destinations out there that see us as such a hot commodity. So,
yeah, maybe so. Fair point. Anyway, right, we'll move on from that because that's been a well-trodden path. Recently, move on to the last bit of news, which is that the wide receiver Javon McKinley and tight end Jerome Pickney have been re-signed to the practice squad since we last spoke with you. They were released on Saturday, replaced by a punter and a long snapper that I haven't heard of for the weekend. It looks to have been a COVID precaution with the kicker, Austin Siebert, going on the COVID list. They brought in a couple of specialists just to make sure that they were shorn up in those positions. And then once the game's come and gone, they were released and McKinley and Pinkney re-signed. I wasn't actually aware that they'd made those moves. I had missed that completely. I was away for the weekend, so there we go. But common sense moves, fair enough. Let's move on to the game now. And the inactives, we knew that Jamie Collins wasn't going to be there. The trade candidate is obviously moving on soon. And by the evidence of this game, good riddance to him. No Trey Flowers as well, along with Jermar Jefferson and Tom Kennedy. And despite an article with my name on it, I don't think there's a huge amount of Trey Flowers highlight reel moments. Thanks, Steve Collins, you absolute bellend. He edited the article when I didn't proofread the proofreader, and he'd added in something in my own words. So props to him being an asshole. Trey Flowers, obviously the big loss there. I'm not sure that we perhaps missed him in this game. Maybe on a couple of third downs he could have done something, but it came as a surprise to some, but not to me, given that he hadn't practiced all week. How about you?
No, I knew by Thursday he wasn't going to play. If you've missed 2.5 solid days of practice, you can't justify playing him. Not against like someone like Lamar Jackson. Like, you can't have a guy, an outside linebacker, going into a game rusty when you've got the potential that a guy is going to just take off or tuck and run. If you can't set the edge, like, he'd have been an absolute liability.
Yeah, he really would be. And just before we delve into this now, the game, just want to thank everyone, Ausio or live, if you're listening to us. Thank you so much. Really appreciate you. Dan Pask, Ashley Soden in the Twitch chat, and Debt Fan Man, Ferglines 509, Luke Giesfield Review, and the rest of you. Thank you very much for your support. Right, Ravens 19, Lions 17. It was a game of two halves, at least for the offense, but the defense seemed to play, bar a snap or two, a fairly complete or consistent game. Ryan, what did you think overall before we delve into the quarter-by-quarter look? How do you feel about how the team did?
Offensively, the first half was putrid. It was woeful. I think that is probably what cost us the game in the end. You go whole half, you don't put up points. You probably deserve to lose. Goff, like I say, he was a wet blanket. He crapped his pants any time they sent more than three rushes. Like I say, he just panicked. Like I say, I think he was like, what, 5 for 7 for like 38 yards, like for most of the first half. Like, he was just too scared. Like I say, when people got in his face, he either took the sack or he tried to scramble and make something happen. And like I say, it just didn't work well. So, but like I say, the defense, the 99% of the game went counted, like you say, we put a blanket on those guys. There were some crucial drops. I'll give them that. Marquise Hollywood. The game should have been out of bounds, well out of sight. But it's there. That's on his concentration. But there were guys there to make plays. Someone like Bobby Price. He had a pretty good game. Like these outside guys really held their own against some established people. The only place we struggled was we couldn't stop Mass. I didn't think we weren't going to be able to. But I think everything else, we managed to keep Lamar in the pocket. We managed to make him, force him to do what he don't like to do. He don't like throwing off his back foot. He don't like having to hang around in the pocket and wait for the roots to develop. He's used to stuff happening like that, and it didn't happen like that. So we got a few coverage sacks, which is very rare to see in Detroit because they just don't exist. But no, we got to him. We brought him down, and the tackling was really efficient. I'd say it was a really good game. I would love to see this performance exactly next week.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see against the Chicago team with the not exactly the best passing offense in the world, or one net yard, shall we say. That was fun. Right, let's move into quarter by quarter, and then we're going to take it position by position just to look in a bit more in depth. So first quarter ended with no score. The Lions made two really nice stops and Tucker missed a 49-yarder. Goff, slightly inaccurate passing, but also the O-line wasn't very good at protecting him. There were some exotic blitzes in there from Baltimore, and there always seemed to be a free man rushing. And so Goff didn't handle it well, but I'm not sure how much you put on him and how much you put on the O-line being poor. Jonah Jackson especially had a really bad first quarter.
Yeah, the O-line in the first quarter was not good. I think, I can't remember which quarter it was, but like I say, I know Sewell got called early for holding. Like I say, they were resorting to grabbing people. Like I say, there was stunting. They were blitz safety late. Like, props to Baltimore. They mixed it up. They gave us probably the best we had to pick up all season. And at times, we just didn't deal with it. Like you say, people were in office majority of the time. And like I say, running backs didn't have a great day picking up the blitz. Like I say, like Jamar Jefferson would have probably done pretty well in this game because I'd have liked him to pick up blockers. They weren't active. So it was a quarter where both teams were just feeling out and both offenses just were very stagnant.
Yeah. What do you think about the handoff to Swift and the pass back to Goff, which was, to me, a fumble? I think it should have been Baltimore's ball. But what did you see when it was called a forward pass on review?
That was like six of one, half a dozen of another. I thought that call could have gone very different another day and it would have turned out to be a disaster. I liked the exotic play call. It was fun. We tried to catch him out, but execution was poor and we were very lucky to retain the ball. But I like that we tried it. Like, that's not something we would normally do.
No. It reminded me very much...
I had better execution that could have paid off.
It reminded me very much of the play that Deshaun Watson and the Texans ran at Thanksgiving last year that was the really long touchdown, 60-yard touchdown in the corner, near side corner. Will Fuller, wasn't it? So I think it looks exactly the same play design as that. So we've seen that before. My own thoughts on that forward pass. the forward pass, when they were calling it, they were saying, right, so just before the arm is hit, you've got to look at where the arm is going and where the intention of the throw is. And what I saw was someone passing back to the quarterback backwards so the quarterback could throw forwards. That was the intention of the play. And the way the arm starts to move and the hand starts to move is back towards Goff. And for me, it's the contact with the defender that allows the ball to go forward, still with slight control, but it changed the trajectory of where the ball was going. I would have stayed with the call on the field. I'm surprised, given the call on the field, they thought they had enough evidence to overturn the call. Because I thought that in a play that's so borderline, the call on the field is almost always king.
Yeah, yeah, it was a lateral that was deflected forward. On another day, that state that call on the field and we lose the ball, it turns into a massive blunder.
Yeah. Det Fan Man says, is that Guinness in a glass? It is not. It is rum and Coke today. I didn't fancy beer. I've been on it all weekend, so something a bit easier to drink. He also said, it was quite surprising watching an opposing tight end have a productive day against us. Who could have seen that coming? You're absolutely right. We don't exactly match up very well against those big men, and that's what Ify Melifonwu was meant to be in the team for, and unfortunately, he's not here at the moment. The second quarter rounded out 10-0 to Baltimore. They had a short field to open the scoring where we stopped them just outside the red zone and they took a 39-yard field goal. And that was closely followed by their next drive, which was an 8-play, 65-yard drive for a touchdown. The touchdown came on a 3rd and 18 from the 19 with a kind of lovely drop pass by Lamar Jackson to Duvernay. Several drops by Hollywood Brown. In that quarter alone, I think, two of his drops came. And one where he burned past Bobby Price was especially egregious. It hit him flash in the hands. He was not stretching, I don't think. It was an absolutely perfect pass by Lamar. And I think one thing that came out of this game is although Lamar didn't complete many passes, he was very, very good passing the ball, actually, generally speaking, apart from the interception, which was pressure in his face and he was trying to get rid of it and not eat another sack. You know, that he had a good day.
Yeah. Even the passing complete, like you say, most of them were on the money. Hollywood, well, shit the bed, didn't I? Hit him in the hands, we're near the numbers. They were there to be hauled in. He should have had two touchdowns on the day, and Baltimore at halftime should have been out of sight. They let us off the hook massively. And then in the end, like I say, we really got motivation from that, I think. Like I said, there was the odd blown coverage, but things tightened up. We actually made some second half adjustments. That second quarter, like I say, that drive hurt that they scored the touchdown on. And like I say, look, converting, giving up a 13, you know how bad that was, like I say, because it wouldn't be the first time. It was frustrating, to say the least, like I say, because we were going to second, third down. But then when it got to when it mattered, couldn't get off the field. For some reason, we weren't generating as much pressure as we were. Like, it was kind of like the wrong way around. Like, we were putting them in holes and then just helping them dunk their way out of it. And it was really frustrating at half time because I was surprised to be so close to them score wise. But I think opportunities, like I say, to play on defense.
I mean, I think they could have been out of sight at half time if they'd held on to one of those long passes and if the lateral had been called a lateral, they'd have been out of sight. So I think at half time, we'd have considered ourselves lucky to be in the game, even though the defense were making stops. Like, we had, I think, 4 or 5 stops in that first half. And that's, I've never seen that before in the, well, never seen. I've seen that maybe once in the last 3 or 4 years that we've made that many stops in the first half of the game. I was really impressed. Anyway, we'll move it on to the... Sorry. You go ahead.
No, I agree. Like you say, it's on. Like you say, we don't normally have a half where we don't make a drastic or give up something silly.
All right. Second half started with a field goal by the Ravens on the very first drive. But the next drive, those adjustments seemed to take shape. Goff started heating up. The connection with Swift was obviously there. And Swift actually in this drive had 6 touches on one drive for 49 yards. The drive was itself only 11 plays for 75 yards, ending with a Swift 2-yard rushing touchdown for a 13-7 deficit. The Ravens responded immediately with a field goal, and then the Lions broke... in that drive, the Lions broke the Ravens' touchdown in the red zone streak. So both teams going into this game had scored in 9 consecutive trips to the red zone as touchdowns. So the Lions prevented the Ravens from doing that, and they had to settle for a 32-yard tuck of field goals. So that was really good. What up to Super Cyan Lions? Thanks for coming in, man. One Funky Lions fan as well. So going down 16-7, and then the Lions get the ball back and go on another long touchdown drive. 12 plays, 75 yards, including a 28-yard DPI on Quintez Cephas, who didn't do much in this game, but that was a big moment. And then later on in this drive, there was a big completion to Cleef Raymond for 11 yards on third down, and a big completion to DeAndre Swift for 9 yards on another third down. Swift then maybe scored a touchdown, wasn't given, wasn't reviewed, looked likely that it was, but because it wasn't called on the field, it probably wasn't going to be overturned. And then it was finished off by Jamal Williams on a 1-yard rush. Next Ravens drive, there was a lovely sack by Alex Anzalone in that drive. Like, that really popped off. I absolutely loved that. He really responded in this game to all the criticism that was thrown at him in the last couple of games. Following that, Lamar threw an interception by Armani after pressure up the middle. Following that, the Lions went 9 plays, 62 yards, finishing with 3 runs in the red zone, ending in a 35-yard field goal to kill time and the timeouts. The Ravens game came out with 1:04 left, no timeouts. Conceded 2 sacks in the very first 3 plays, only then to then get a 36-yard play to Watkins. The refs then miss an obvious delay of game and false start penalties before Tucker hits that record 66-yard field goal off the crossbar to win. How you doing, Ryan? You right?
I'm good. Apologies for the delay, lads. Had business to attend to.
No, it's all right. No, all good, man. We've actually just started talking about the second half. I've just summarised what's happened. The Alex Anzalone sack, the Armani interception, and then obviously finishing with disaster. What did you see in that second half, Brian?
Well, it was thanks for throwing me right in the deep end. It was, was it the other Ryan? No, it was a much more improved second half. I mean, you know, when you look for... you know, the transitions, the changes at half time, you know, there was a lot more positives from what I had heard in the first half, because obviously I was late to the party again there with the missing a lot of the first half. I've watched bits back of it, but, you know, it was quite poor football all around in the first half. And second half, I thought that we you know, managed to make our adjustments and get back into it and put up a real fight. I mean, any time that you hold Lamar Jackson to, you know, what we did in that game, it's, you've always got to be, you know, happy. And it never seemed like he had like an easy throw on. I know that he found Andrews a few times who kind of like, you know, carved us up for over 100 yards. But, you know, all in all, I thought we kept them really quite quiet. And, you know, we all know how dangerous they are. We saw it against the Chiefs just 4 or 5 days earlier. So I was pleased with the adjustments in the second half, especially, you know, certain parts of the linebackers as well.
What about you, Ryan?
Yeah, I think it was a case of, like, I was glad, like, we kept going back to that well. Like, we kept just lift. We made the Ravens try and stop us, and they couldn't do it. Like, say, he had what, like, in the whole second half, he probably had, like, say, nearly 11, 12 touches, like, say, if it wasn't a rush, like, say, because there were some good players we were using the lead blocker, high formation. We moved him out wide. Like, we kept him guessing. He did his hands and say, do some, make a miss. Like, it was all designed players. He rushed where, like, say, he ran the odd, like, screen, or he ran, like, a bubble, or, like, say, a wheel outside. Like, we had him all over the field, and that's where he's best, getting the ball in his hands. When he gets outside of the numbers, like, he continued his streak of making people miss, forced tackles. Like, it was a good day for him. That was probably one of the best games he's had as a Lion, I'd say, in 16 outings. And, like, on defense, I think it was good. We continued the pressure. We managed to still keep sending 3 or 4, like you say, on that first and third down on the final drive. We got those sacks, the tension built. And then we blew it calling the timeout. Like, that really, really bothered me on that 4th and 19. I don't see why we called the timeout. We should have just, we're in the moment, we're in a zone. I think that cooled things off a bit and gave the Ravens a chance. Like, it benefited them more than us. I think that was the first bad decision of that time.
So, MCDC has subsequently come out in the press conference this afternoon and said that he didn't feel like we were all on the same page, and he wanted to, for the final play of the game, hopefully, you know, have everyone know exactly what their roles were. And I quote, "Everyone was on the same page except one guy." And it's fairly clear Will Harris, who he's alluding to. Will Harris, I mean, I know we're going to go position by position in a minute, but he had a dire game. I mean, one of his worst as a Lion. And that's saying a lot. I mean, there's been a few bad ones.
He's had an awful year. He's been trash.
Yeah, it's quite hard to understand how he continues to get a job. I mean, you know, people get cut for a lot less, and you know, it's just a glaring weakness in our team every single week. He doesn't seem to improve at all. So I just don't see what they think they can do with him. I mean, you know, how many more chances does one man get? I mean, you know, other people have been run out of town a lot quicker than what he has, and it doesn't seem like he's going anywhere. I mean, that's the funny thing about it. So yeah, he's a weak link, and you know, it's just going to be picked on every single time we play, because it's just glaring. You know, guys like us just see it every single week. And God knows what these coordinators must be thinking when they come up against them. They must be delighted.
Walker and Marlow actually looked pretty good when they played together. They started well.
I agree completely.
Showed bravery, like you said. They made a change. I don't know why they went back to Harris.
No, the guy actually lost out was Walker. Walker played the least snaps.
Yep.
Just unbelievable. Right, so let's break it down position by position, just kind of consider all of the Lions on their own merits in this game. And let's start, as we always do, with quarterback Jared Goff. A tale of two halves for him. Kind of seemed to lack chemistry in the first half, seemed to kind of get it going a bit in the second. We already kind of discussed him a bit, Mr. McCuskey and myself, but Mr. Farden, what did you see from Goff in the second half?
Goff's kind of like one of those people, exactly what it says on the tin. You know, he's someone that you give him a play call and he's always going to kind of just get that play call done. And, you know, he's just so safe. You know, it's kind of dangerous in a way. I mean, I don't know if that makes sense, but it's just so safe that it's, you know, when, not to bring it on to Stafford, but I was watching that game yesterday and you can see why McVay traded for Stafford, because when the run game, when you come up against a team with a good run game, you know, they can defend against a good run, you know, a game that, you know, you need someone who can move the ball quickly down the field for you. I just think with Goff, it's like it always kind of takes three plays in you know, to get a down, basically. It's like, you know, we're not moving those chains fast enough for me. So he, I think he's solid enough. I think he's going to do a good job for us while he's there. Because I don't expect him to be there maybe two seasons. But I think all in all, you know, he's not the weak link. And he actually, for me, looks like one of our better players by quite a distance, in all honesty. But, you know, I have nothing bad to say really about him. Just too safe for me.
Yeah, I can kind of get behind that. If you do judge this team on its merits at the moment in terms of where it is right now, I don't think it's controversial to say that Goff is one of the better players on the team. I think the only concern with him is always that potentially his ceiling just isn't high enough for some people, or that's how they see it, that when this team is ready to win, maybe he's not the guy. And it depends what you think about that point of view, but right now, he is definitely someone who's making us better compared to a replacement-level quarterback. I don't know if you disagree with that, Ryan McCluskey? Ah!
It doesn't make us much better. The only props I'll give him is at least he didn't turn the ball over. Sometimes, let's say, when he's safe, at least he was careful this week, and that's something that has bothered me the first 2 weeks. So I'll give him that. Like you say, he kept us in the game all times. Like, yeah. I say, but like, he is still Mr. Checkdown. A lot of those, like, golf passes, he just likes to dump it off. Or, like, even if it's designed for safety blanket, like you say, he's just, like you say, Lynn sometimes lets him be too safe. He gives him these weak-ass play calls. That drive where he said we were killing the clock is rubbish, because we left 64 seconds on the clock. They should have had 40 seconds on the clock. How on earth can you say you're killing the clock and leave a team a minute? You can score two touchdowns in a minute and they only need a field goal. That was awful. I hated every second of that. I felt like we could have wasted more time and still taken the field goal. Like, you could have taken a delay of game, tried forward for another 5 yards, like, and still been in field goal range. There was more creative ways there to kill time. And in the end, it came back to bite us on the ass. But I say that's not on Goff.
No. Okay, well, hang on. Let's talk about that then and those three run plays. Would you have called it differently, those three plays? Would you have called any passes, or would you have been clever with any sort of play design, or would you have just done what they did?
I would definitely throw the ball. I'd definitely throw the ball, 1,000,000%. I mean, we have one of the, I think, we have like one of the best red zone conversion rates in the whole of the NFL. So, you know, obviously we're doing something right in a vital part of the field. We're getting touchdowns. To run the ball three times, and you just know when you're leaving it down there to Lamar Jackson of all players, who can hurt you with his feet and go and get 20 yards just in 5 seconds or whatever, you know, or, you know, he can still sling it. You know, I know there's questions over his throwing of the ball, whatever, but I still think he's a top player. But, you know, they had to be aggressive. And for a coach that is quite aggressive, especially on like things like fourth down and stuff like that, I can't believe that he didn't say, look, fucking sling it in there. Let's have a go. You know, let's try and get into one of our best players, you know, Hockenson or whatever. And they're just too safe for me. And I actually think that the Ravens just felt that they were going to run it three times. I think that they kind of knew that the Lions were nervous, that they were desperate to get this win, that they were playing to win it on defense with the last minute on the clock, which was a minute too long. Ryan said it was perfectly. There should have been no more than 40 seconds on that clock by the time they got the ball.
I think one of the plays I would have loved to have seen is in the first couple of games, they seem to have really liked running the I formation bootleg play action to Kubinda.
And it's gone out and rolled it out.
It just felt like the perfect opportunity to run that play. And you know what? If you don't throw the pass to Kubinda, Goff can keep it, can slide, you still keep the clock running. But it just felt like a really good opportunity to do that. Or Ferg Lions 509, how you doing, man? Said a zone stretch play would have killed more time as well as instead of just running straight up the middle, which is a fair point. One point that was made by Super Saiyan Lions was he thinks that one of the things that people are missing in this game is that in these three games so far this season, there's been massive improvement game on game for him. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I do. I think that there has been big improvements on this team without a shadow of a doubt. I think, that it's we're in every game most of the time. You know, that the last week in Green Bay, obviously it was a shocking third quarter. And before you know it, you know, when you play these top teams, whether we like to admit it, like Green Bay are a team that's going to win this division of ours and they're going to be in the playoffs and they're a team that can easily get hot and go, unfortunately, all the way. I don't think they will this year, but they can do, depending on the luck of the draw. But, you know, yeah, I think that, you know, compared to where we were last year after three games and where we are now, and because, you know, I know that they don't see it as a rebuild, the coaching team, but, you know, they've got them playing hard and we're really aggressive in certain things. It's just little, and the fact that we actually got better this week, you know, in training, you could tell that they must have worked really hard because we're a much better team than what we were defensively in Green Bay just a few days before. So I see positives. I think it's a good, I think there's definitely an improvement happening on a game by game basis. And I really am excited for the Chicago game. I think Chicago could be a real kind of like game where people go, oh, like they, you know, if they're watching Red Zone or whatever, they could go, oh, this looks like a good game or something. I think we'll see big improvements again this week. I'm looking forward to it. I think that, you know, I think that there are a lot of positivities around the Lions, even in defeat, believe it or not.
Yeah. Enough. This was the worst week of the season for the O-line. I think, like say, we had penalties. Like say, we started great week one, good week two. It wasn't very good yesterday, but the defense has trended up in every way. Like say, we've got better. Like say, it's amazing what getting rid of Jamie Collins did. Like how much a difference literally a few days makes. Like Anzalone, he actually looked pretty good yesterday, and pretty much everyone wanted rid of him a week ago. We were ready to pay for his flight and ship him out. Most people. But like I say, it's just like, can someone have been holding him back so much? We'll see next week. Like I say, the jury's out. We'll see if he delivers again next week. But yeah, I'd say the run game, like I say, I think that was it was a huge week for Swift. We didn't need much of Williams, like I say, but everything is ticking in the right direction. Now, next week, the performance for me will not be important. We're expected to win that game. If we lose, but we look good, it won't mean anything because this game matters. We have to win next week, even if that means winning ugly.
Has anyone seen the opening line for the Bears-Lions game next week?
No, but I imagine we're probably small underdogs, if I had to guess.
I'm just going to look now.
I'd personally be surprised if we were favourites for it, especially with it being at Soldier Field, but, you know. And they've got some good defense at the end of the day as well. Let's not forget that.
The Bears are 3-point favorites, which I guess means at home that they think it's a level game, right?
Yeah.
Okay, fair enough. Right, so let's move on to some running backs then. So Swift and Williams. Swift, 14 carries for 47 yards and a touchdown. Williams, 12 for 42 and a touchdown. A fairly efficient performance, I thought, generally speaking. But it's one of those, again, yet again, where we're coming away saying the running game looked good, but we've got under 100 yards from running backs in this game. And it seems to be something that I know we got behind in this game, but we were never more than like 13 points behind. So never more than two possessions. And yet we let it get away from us in terms of the running game, I feel. So I'd like Lynn to stick with it a bit more. I don't know about you guys. There were some kind of pseudo run plays where Swift got the ball near the line of scrimmage, but I don't know, I didn't feel like the Ravens were particularly defending it well.
Did it? I mean, I don't know if it played a major role. I'm sure it did, actually. I thought that, I know it's a little bit off topic, but I thought Ragnar like had a real kind of fight on all game long, you know what I mean? And I thought that the O-line did do a good job of, you know, with the run game as much as they could have, really, as much as they're allowed to, because I think that obviously everyone knows that's sort of our strength on offense is trying to run the ball. So I think that, you know, that was a real fight, you know, against a really good Ravens defense, you know. So I don't know, it's a difficult one because, you know, you got to get the ball to the best players at the end of the day. And, you know, Swift is one of those. But, you know, I thought overall I was quite happy with it, but maybe could have done a bit more.
I actually agree, like you say. For a game where we were never in a position where we had to score that quickly and we didn't have to take deep shots, we did seem to shine the run, even though we knew it was it Brandon Williams who was there? Who was that key guy in the missing?
Yeah, Brandon Williams. Yeah.
I would have expected us to attempt to run up the middle a little bit more than we did. I think for some reason we shied away from that, like say these halfback tosses and stuff to Swift. When I thought the middle of their line was weak, we seemed to avoid it and keep trying to go around the outside when needs be. So I don't know, like, they knew something we didn't. The one thing I will say is that we were told last week Swift will get involved in the passing game more, and they delivered on that at least. At least they stuck to their words, and that did work. I think I don't feel like our rushing performances are defined on 100-yard rushing games. I do feel like more these days, it is a bit of clock management, and it's something we almost pulled off. Like, it's something we've been notoriously bad at in years, but now we do look genuinely more balanced, which for me, for 3 weeks of the season, I'm reasonably happy. I haven't felt this consistent running game for a few years. So right now, I think we're in a reasonably good place.
I think I'm right in saying from the PFF grades, yeah, I am. This was Ragnall's worst run blocking game of the year so far, with a grade of 77.3.
That's a very good grade.
His run blocking grade on the year so far is 92.6. Best center in the league, just by far. It's not a competition right now. Okay, so that's the running backs. Let's move on to the wide receivers. And statistically led by Khalif Raymond, 6 for 68 off 10 targets. Otherwise, no one else in the wide receiver room had more than one catch. Cardarrelle Hodge, 1 for 9 off one target. Cephas obviously had the big DPI call, but he had 1-on-1 target for 8. Amon-Ra had 1-on-1 for 2. So, like, there wasn't much going there, and that kind of is borne out by the poor first half performance and their use of Swift in the second half. But Raymond did come alive and actually came up clutch on a couple of third downs. What did you guys think? Were you disappointed that other players didn't really get involved? It's kind of funny to see Jared Goff come up on the stat sheet for receiving. He didn't catch his one target.
I mean, I didn't have those stats in front of me, but I mean, the only one you basically just summed it up, is the only one I remembered was Raymond. So I did think that, why aren't they trying to get the ball to Cephas a little bit? But yeah, it was just non-existent, wasn't it? There was no real targets for anyone other than Raymond out there. So that's definitely something that's got to be improved on, because you know, that's a tough defense we're coming up against next week. So, well, on Sunday. So we've got to have something special in mind for them when we're going to be having to throw the ball, because we're going to need to move it as well. So I don't know. Very, very strange. I was surprised. I'm not sure why they went down that route.
From what I saw, the separation was poor. The wide receivers had a stinker. Like, they were not getting free. Like, they were pissing about at the line. They were hand fighting. They couldn't get any yards of roof. Couple that with Goff, like say, having maybe 1-2 seconds, like prior to the snap, getting the ball off someone in his face. It was just a non-existent day. Fair play to like Khalif Raymond to actually manage to get something going. Like, he utilized his elite speed to just get that little bit of 1 yard's room, 1-2 yards room he needed. like say when we knew that late in that third, early in the fourth, like he came alive and like say he showed good hands on that important third down that was field, like that was a real concentration catch. And this kid is really coming up probably right now as probably our best receiver. Like he's really leading this pack of odd job ragtag kind of guys, isn't he? Like, and that's credit to his hard work, I think. Hockenson, I'm not actually surprised. Like, we knew they were going to blitz, they were going to stunt. He needed to help stay tucked in and like just bat away some guys on the outside. There was no time or room for him to separate and break off onto routes. I'd say I expected a quiet day from him, but not even that, because my fantasy team suffered for a hell of it.
Yeah, they did stymie Hock quite a bit, but in his place, Darren Fells actually had a very good game. He had a reception or two. Yeah, 2 on 3 targets for 35 yards, including, I think it was one quite early where he bombed down the field. And I was like, oh my God, he looks like an absolute tank down there, the old man. That was really good to see. But he also contributed very well in the blocking game. I saw a few times he was the man on the line. The clock split out a little bit. I don't know what to think about Raymond. I think that given that he's on a one-year deal, I think that he is definitely carving out a role for himself, potentially as the future WR3 of this team going forward, maybe a kind of low-end WR2, because if we can pick up someone high-profile in free agency, if we maybe take a high draft pick, like late first or early second-round pick to take a wide receiver, he could find himself down the depth chart. But I'd be confident in his ability to produce as a starter or the first guy off the bench. You know, he's got safe hands, he's got nice feet, he runs his routes well with purpose, he doesn't hesitate particularly much. There's just a lot to like about Raymond's game. All right.
I agree. Yeah, like I said, of all the people that we've got on these rentals, he's the only one that's showing any real case to return. And that includes Trinity Benson. Like, even though we traded for him, like, right now, I would axe him at the end of the year, Raymond, to get it. Plus, because like, Raymond's done that odd bit, like, on field position, he might get 10, 15 yards on his kick returns. So he's contributing where he can for someone that's probably getting minimum wage. Like, he's doing a good service to probably get another one-year deal. So fair play to him.
Just want to say hi to Pride of Detroit on Twitch for joining us on the stream. Appreciate you guys for being here and listening to us. And John Kapler as well on YouTube as well. You guys all listening live, everyone listening on record. Appreciate you listening to some enthusiastic UK fans talking about the great American sport. Right, let's move on to the O-line. We've spoken about them before. Ryan, you said that it was their worst performance of the year. Ryan Barden, what did you think about the O-line performance in this game?
Yeah, I think that you know, they did, you know, well up against a really good defense at the end of the day. I mean, you know, the Baltimore Ravens are a serious, serious outfit. So, you know, I know, was it Jackson maybe struggled once or twice? I think he got a big holding call, which cost us a few yards. I thought Big V actually made some big plays, which anyone who knows me knows that I'm not a fan of Big V, but I remember him making a big hole for the run game at a certain point. I can't remember exactly when it was now, but, you know, all in all, you know, Saul was solid again. So, you know, Ragnow had, he must be hurting this morning, Ragnow, because he had a real bruiser. So, you know, I thought that considering the team that they were going up against, I thought that they had a really good team, a really good game. And again, you know, the run game was effective for us. So, you know, that proves it as well that, you know, they delivered for us again, I think. It's just that we couldn't make the plays when we were throwing the ball, you know.
What about you, Ryan? What did you think?
Yeah, like Ryan said, when they were in pass pro and they were blocking, like say, they were getting confused. Like say, these were stunting the late blitzes. Like they were sometimes having to grab fabrics, grab jerseys just to try to pick up these late blitzes. Like they didn't handle this dynamic defense as well. Like I said, blitzing the safeties, the linebackers. Like that was the day they struggled. Like you say, like they didn't help Goff at all in that first half. Like there was a few costly penalties as well. like I said, Sewell, Jackson, like I said, both got holding call. Like it was one of probably the more less one of the least disciplined games of the season, which was a bit frustrating to see. It was a big false start, I remember. I think that might have been Jackson that hurt us. Like it was a very up and down day. Like I say, in the end, we almost got there with a rough day on the line, which could have, like, we'd have overlooked it, but in the end, like, we did struggle to get anything that half, like, and it did ultimately come back to haunt us.
I can't remember who tweeted it. I think it might have been Pride of Detroit, but I'm not 100%. Said that Sewell's grade yesterday of 45.5 is lower than any grade Taylor Decker has had in his career so far. I know Sewell's only young, and I think it was based on isolated snaps where he committed a hold in a bad spot and that sort of thing, whereas actually his overall play was okay. I do remember a couple of sacks coming outside the left tackle where the protections just weren't quite called right. I'm not sure if the protections are called wrong that can really be on the left tackle, but I do think that's hurting his grade. So I don't think it's as bad as they're saying, but that's maybe on the entire offensive line as opposed to just one man. But that left-hand side of Jackson and Sewell did suffer a little bit, whereas Matt Nelson was the highest-rated non-Ragnow O-line player with a 73 grade, including a 75 run-blocking grade, which was third on the team. So, for all Matt Nelson's detractors and his bad first couple of weeks, he kind of bounced back in a small way. I mean, I don't remember seeing any sacks coming off that right-hand side. I don't know about you guys.
I think the right side had an easier day. If not, that's all I'm putting it down to. I think they saw less work. I think, like I said, Jackson and Sewell, they targeted them specifically. But no, like I said, at least one side was able to hold up its side of the bargain. So, like I say, that tweet, like I say, I take that tweet with a pinch of salt about Decker and Sewell. Like I say, because I'm pretty sure, still through three games, Sewell's been no credit of no sacks, I think, currently out there. So for anyone, like, that's all you can ask of a rookie, really.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think expectations are just so high for him. It's pretty unfair on him most games. You know, him playing well is not a surprise, which is just a bad spot. What up, Doe, to Antonio Jenkins. Glad you can make it, man. Right, let's move on to the defense and start off with the interior defensive line. And we have, who do we have on the interior? Michael Brockers, Levi Onwuzurike, Nick Williams, John Pennacini, Aleem McNeil. I don't remember a huge amount of pressure coming up the middle. I remember that there was a sack by Brockers, maybe, but other than that, I don't remember too much pressure coming up the middle. It all seemed to come on the edges, Ryan.
I think Brockers split a sack. I can't remember it was. I think I'm pretty sure he was given a sack, yeah. No, I agree. They held their own, but they really didn't generate much pressure inside. Like I say, everything came round from the outside, from the acquirers and, like I say, Harris. They were pretty good in the run game. I'll give them that. Like you say, they were very, very stout up the middle. Like I say, there was everyone would get the ball team. Like I say, they did their job. They were sturdy. But like I say, they weren't able to shed blocks, get off inside and, like, force Lamar outside, which I don't mind. I didn't want pressure inside to flood him out. I wanted it around the edges to pin. I wanted to keep him inside. So I'm glad that we didn't break through too many times in the middle, because I feel like if they'd have missed, they'd have just scooted around the edge. So, but no, I think they had a good day. Like I say, we know they're down to a few running backs, but they're really solid, like, in the middle. They had a pretty good day, I'd say. And it went understated because we didn't hear from them much. That's never usually that much of a bad thing.
No, it's a very fair point. Yeah, they were very good on run defense. I don't remember too much coming from there at all. Talking about these edge guys now, Julian Aquara, Romeo Aquara, Charles Harris, Austin Bryant on those edges. And they were four of the top six ranked players on this team. Julian only saw 10 snaps, pass rush, one on coverage, and posted an elite 91.7 grade. In his 10 snaps, he had four pressures. Like, that's ridiculous, including absolutely destroying the right guard on one rep. Like, that was fantastic. I live to see that.
Yeah, like I say, he underestimated him and he brushed him, didn't he? And he just blew him up and he fell straight back. And like you say, I'm pretty sure he got in the throwing lane and that was an incompletion for Lamar. He did a good job. He got his hands up because he's got such a long frame. Like, that was great play. The sample size wasn't big, but Aquara showed just how explosive he is. Like, he is could be a dominant pass rusher. Like I say, if you use him in the right scenario, like, he easily had the best game he's ever played in such a small, short career.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things that's always been said about Julian is that he is a speed rusher. So to see that bull rush was really impressive and quite surprising to me, really. Moving on to the rest of those edge outside guys, Romeo and Charles Harris both posted 6 pressures, including a sack apiece. And Austin Bryant had 2 pressures and a sack as well. In terms of dropping into coverage, because I know you guys love to know how much those outside linebackers are actually playing coverage. Romeo had 58 snaps and dropped into coverage 7 times, so just over 10%. Charles Harris on the other side, 45 snaps and dropped into coverage 4 times, so again, about 10%. Julian, once into coverage in 10 snaps, is about 10%, but Austin Bryant, 1 in 13 snaps. So they're all kind of hovering around that same amount, where 90% of the time, they're playing the run or the pass and they're not dropping in, but they were doing it just enough to get in those passing lanes for Lamar and making it really hard for him, and they weren't able to predict what was happening. Like, you're confusing him by putting pressure up the edge so he can't escape that way, and then when he's trying to throw, sometimes he's throwing a man in there in that lane and you're not letting him have any way out. And I think that's partially why we had so many coverage sacks, as you mentioned before.
Yeah, when you get these outside linebackers and you do drop them into coverage so few, it's impossible to guess when. And like, these are guys that have got long arms, long range. They were able to, like say, stick a hand out. They were able to, like say, block his line of sight. And he was never quite sure when they were going to come up and come around the edge and go at him, or they were going to show fake and quickly backpedal into it. Like say, he was never able to get an adjustment in that, because like say, we had 4 or 5 guys who were blitzing him at different times, who were dropping them differently. Like, he never quite got a pattern. They did really well. Like, we used them to minimal.
All right, let's move on to the inside linebackers. And for me, probably the most improved unit on the team game to game. Jalen Reeves-Maybin, Alex Anzalone, and who's the other one who I've missed? Derek Barnes. So Derek Barnes posted the worst PFF score on the team. On the team, including the offense? Yeah, on the team, including the offense. 24.9. He got burned on a few passing plays. But overall, in general, I felt this linebacking unit were very effective in tackling and in run defense, especially not letting Lamar escape. But Anzalone and Jalen Reeves-Maybin seemed to pop up multiple times, including things, you know, that aren't sacks, but maybe Lamar for a 2-yard escape gain, shall we call it, where he looked like he was going to get away. And Jalen Reeves-Maybin really surprised me. I don't know about you, Ryan, what you felt on that.
In the first half, it was really impressive. I think at one point he had a tackle for loss, and there was one play where Lamar escaped out and he was looking for the sideline, like he wanted to like really do some damage, and he managed to just wrap him up, bring him down, like, and he stopped again. Like, it was used sparingly. Like, say, they used his and his decent arm length, like saying they were able to. He managed to rack up a few big plays where they could have gone for a lot further in the end. Like I say, he had a pretty good day, especially in the first half. Barnes, like I say, he got burned for like maybe 60 yards, but it was bend, don't break. Off those 60 yards, they really didn't gain all that much. Like I said, it was like he gave up yards, but they weren't monster plays. Like I say, they kept drives going, but he was a solid tackler. Like I say, like, they weren't broken tackles. Like, he was there for the best part, and I think the grade probably doesn't do justice to how well he played. Like, say, helping support the run. Like, say, another good day tackling. Like, this is exactly what we wanted to see from these guys, mixing it up a bit. Like, they had a good day as a unit.
Yeah, I completely agree. I do wonder how much Derek Barnes was perhaps slightly affected by a minor injury he picked up early in the game. Yeah, he came straight back on, apparently, and I kind of missed that. But if that was in the back of his mind for the rest of the game, I wouldn't have been surprised to see that affecting. But he seemed to kind of fly around at 100 miles an hour regardless. I don't think you're going to be able to keep him down. But Anzalone deserves a huge amount of credit for the flack that he's taken in this last week from people on this podcast, people on other podcasts and on YouTube and what have you, people saying, including myself, that perhaps it's time to move on from him, that he hasn't shown enough, and him and Collins as a package deal aren't good enough. Do you think that Collins going was addition by subtraction for Anzalone specifically, or do you just think that he had a bounce back game because that's how this game works? Sometimes you're bad and sometimes you're good.
No, I think, like, actually, I think it did help. I think he had less to worry about because Collins, like, for the best part, was pretty slow. I think Anzalone, always in the back of his mind, had a little inkling, like, I need to see what he's doing. I need to see if they're going to want him. I've got to be able to break off what I'm doing to go help if need to be. If Anzalone knows I've got a guy next to me that's got recovery speed, like, he can probably focus more on his assignment. If he just focuses wholly on what he's doing, like, that is one less burden. And I feel like he feels less responsible for Barnes, who can, for all intents and purposes, Barnes is there to make his own mistakes. Anzalone is not responsible for the mistakes he makes. But Collins, like, say, he would drag people into mud with him. And Anzalone was one of those people, like, say. So I think now there's a weight lifted on him. And I'd expect Alex now to, he's not always going to have the best weeks, but I don't feel like we'll see these disastrous performances from him now, because I feel like he's probably less evident with, like, having to mop up the old man.
Yeah, and you never know. It could be something as pathetic as, you know, he's come into the team, Anzalone, and got, like, you know, a captain's nod, you know, with having that C on the jersey, and maybe someone like Collins doesn't like it and, you know, doesn't want to take as many orders off of someone like him during the game. You just don't know. It could be something that pathetic, because there seems to be a major problem with him anyway, you know, Collins and his attitude. So at least with someone like Barnes, yes, it's going to be issues for the boy, because he's you know, jumping into the big leagues now. But at least he's going to be someone that wants to, is going to be willing to learn, and someone that's going to take, you know, instructions when given to him. So, you know, we definitely saw an improvement in Anzalone's game. I mean, I think everyone would agree that after, I mean, I know passions run high, especially when most of us watched it in the morning and then done, you know, a lot of the lads done the podcast later that day. You know, I had to go for a drink and ended up getting pissed. So, you know, it was frustrating, but Anzalone was definitely a big improvement on last week in Green Bay, and, you know, they, you know, it looked more solid there anyway. But you know, still a hell of a lot of work to be done. There's no doubt about that.
Definitely right. Let's move on to the cornerback room. So that was headed up by Amani Oruwariye. We also had Bobby Price and A.J. Parker. I actually don't see any other cornerbacks taking snaps, which is a bit surprising. Okay, all right, that was it. So Oruwariye had the pick, obviously, so that gives him a reasonable grade up there. But my guy, Bobby Price, went out there, and he got burned on one play, which wasn't caught by Hollywood Brown. But other than that, I thought he looked tremendous out there. A.J. Parker had apparently the worst game of his young career. But I kind of feel like he fits into that Derek Barnes situation as well, Ryan, where, like, kind of the plays that he got burned on really actually didn't cost us all that much. Do you agree?
I'd agree. Because, like I said, like, being that nickel corner guy, they kind of wanted Mark Henry to take him to school. I mean, Mark Andrews to take him to school. And, like, there were these crossing routes, they were across the middle. Like, Parker's stat line wasn't great, but it wasn't also that detrimental to, like, the final result. Like, he got took to the cleaners a few times, like, say, like, against, like, a near elite tight end, like, say, some slot guys inside. But the numbers, like say, he alone, we bent, we didn't break, which was key. I think our cornerback unit was a pretty good blanket all day in general. Oral Warrior, that interception literally was like a muffin basket, wasn't it? Like, you didn't have to do anything for it. Lamar got flustered, made a mistake. But like I say, in the end, I think him and Price held down the outside pretty well. Like, they made the mistake once, they didn't make it again. Like, they gave, like, Hollywood Brown, like, got one chance. He didn't take him, but he didn't get another. Like I say, I think this was probably the best game all season from corners. Like, I think they respected the pass game, played it well. They knew they had the guys to potentially beat them. And I think they adjusted well and they kept the discipline. There were I don't think we gave away any pass interference. I don't think there was any defensive holding on the corners. Like, it was a really mature output. They seemed mature for guys that were all like 24, 25, 23.
So I do know for AJ Parker that one of the receptions he gave up was for a touchdown. So that's obviously going to hurt his rating a little bit. Bobby Price actually led the entire team on pass breakups with two, and then Tracy Walker had the other one. We'll talk about safeties in a moment. But what did you feel about the cornerbacks, Ryan?
Well, I mean, it's just been a nightmare part of our team, you know, especially with all the injuries that we picked up. And it's just been, you know, a never-ending story. So, to be honest with you, I completely agree with what Ryan said. I thought that, you know, we were lucky that none of those big plays cost us, really. But, you know, overall, that was, you know, a kind of like a positive part of our whole team's performance, I think, you know, was at cornerback. So, you know, it was a tough game out there. I honestly thought that, you know, Marquise Hollywood Brown was going to have a big day against us. He was definitely put in my fantasy team for it, but he didn't really get much done. So, you know, Watkins, you know, didn't cause a hell of a lot of problems. I mean, he had a decent game, but I think all in all, it was a positive. I still think they need help out there. I'm surprised that we haven't gone out and traded for someone. You know, yeah, I mean, in a position where we're normally worried about it, it was actually one where we came out with more positives than we did negatives for once.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to beat the drum for Bobby Price the whole time, because the upside for if he gets it is so high with his athleticism. He's potentially the most athletic player on the team. So if it was his lack of football intelligence that was holding him back. And he looks like he's starting to get there. So I'm going to ride this train and I'm not getting off until he gets cut.
Yeah, I think like Campbell, didn't he say in his press conference that, you know, that, I think he's got like a lot of love for these youngsters, because he sees, like, I think that a lot of these young players are embodying what Campbell wants. And, you know, with the football development, that's going to take time anyway. But I mean, it's I think that there's definitely an identity with these young players that have come into this team, you know, that one or two maybe on the wide receiver need to fight a little bit harder. But, you know, I think there is an identity with these players. And, you know, I think that we can forgive mistakes, you know, because they're so young and they are trying very hard, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So, you know, that's a positive for me anyway. And especially, you know, I just haven't seen him bite a kneecap off yet, but I think it's coming this week in Chicago.
Let's move on to the safety room then, and three to pick from. We've already spoken about them mostly already, but Tracy Walker, we had Dean Marlowe and Will Harris. Who wants to take who? Because this is a right plethora. Ryan?
I'll just take Marlowe, because I don't remember really even seeing him, to be honest with you. So I'll just take that and just say, not much to say about it. Leave you two to just talk about the other two, because I can't go through it again. time out.
Go away, lads. Calm, Ryan. Will Harris, how long has he got left on this team?
Weeks, not months. I think if he keeps going like this and losing concentration and making these rookie players, then I think Jalen Elliott will be getting called off the practice squad quickly, or we're going to be signing a veteran guy. He doesn't have long left. Like, they took that time out on that fourth and 19th to get everyone on the same page, including him. And Sammy Watkins was still allowed to find room and work his way across the field and then turn up field for 10 more yards. Like, it was inexcusable. Like, he up until that point, he didn't make too many costly errors. Like, he made a few reasonably good tackles, but that kind of just undid all the hard work for me. Like, and it's just another, like, big key highlight. When he makes a mistake, he stands out too much, and we're just saying his name far too often. He's becoming a league wink that's getting picked on.
Just you start to think you know, like you're being a bit of an arsehole or a dickhead, kind of continually hamming the kid, but it's not getting better. So if someone's not getting better at their job in any field or position, whether you're at McDonald's or, you know, a top high-end company, it doesn't matter. You're not getting good and you're not producing and or, you know, improving at least, then it's time to go. So it's a case of it could be the last week we see him, especially if he has a rough week against God knows which quarterback is going to play in Chicago. So if one of those light him up, then, you know, what we're doing, we've got to get rid of the weak link in the team and give someone else a shot, because he's had plenty of bites at the cherry and he just, yeah, get it done. Simple as that. I honestly, can you imagine if he was playing for someone like Bruce Arians or something like that? Bruce Arians would have kicked his ass out in like week one, you know what I mean? Or something like that, let alone week two. Now it's week three. I mean, week four, he gets burned week four. We're talking about Will Harris, like him again this week. He's got to go. Simple as that. Let's hope he has a stormer, but I don't see it happening.
So you've got three former practice squad Lions on the free agent wire at the moment. You've got D'Angelo Amos, friend of the pod, Jalen Elliott, and I spotted one other. Where did he go? Elijah Holder. I cannot believe any of them would play worse right now. But elsewhere, you've also got Kenny Vaccaro, Trey Boston, Carl Joseph, Will Parks, DJ Swearinger, like Andrew Adams. Some of these guys have got to do something more. Surely, please, I'm begging you, come in here or just play Dean Marlowe. Like, just play Dean Marlowe. What's wrong with it? I don't know. But so Tracy Walker came out with a very good grade. However, I'm not sure that he's been marked down properly, and so this is where I'm going to move away from PFF as well. The touchdown, where there was a busted coverage, the cornerback on the play and the safety on the play both took the inside man, leaving him wide open in the end zone. Walker was the safety. I cannot for the life of me remember who the cornerback was. But for me, that looked like it was the safety's fault and not the corner. But Ryan, you're the DB. What did you see?
No, I agree. I think the cornerback Price, I think that was on Walker. Like, if he had like a deep third or a deep half, you take the, like, leave the shallowest route to the corner. They both bit on the inside. Like I said, that guy broke outside and had to saunter into the end zone. He should have kept it deep and been over the top of that. Like I said, I had that mistake on Walker.
Yeah.
And that would have dramatically
reduced his grade. I think they're both so bad that sometimes I can't even tell the difference between them until I see the shirt number. I really can't tell that much of a difference between them. I think that they're both atrocious.
I think for me, it's more that they can both get lost in coverage and they are both prone to it. But for Will Harris, that seems to be the default and he can sometimes make a good play. Whereas Tracy Walker seems to play well on average, but can just get lost on the odd play. But because when you get lost on the odd play in the secondary, that can result in a touchdown. It's far more glaring when that happens. So I hear what you're saying, Ryan. It is sometimes indistinguishable, but because the safeties, when you play split safeties, when you play too high or too man, they do kind of come as a pair. Much in the same way that the inside linebackers come as a pair. So I kind of want to take Will Harris out because I believe he's the weakest link and see what Tracy plays like with a more competent partner. Because I do wonder if there's an element of the addition by subtraction here that we've seen in the linebackers too.
Yeah,
I don't.
I've been a show.
Yeah, cool. Okay, special teams, not much to talk about, but there was the one play which was taken away with Jerry Jacobs running out of bounds where our boy, Jason Kubinda, did knock the ball free and turned it over. That was a real shame that came back, but he ranks out on special teams, 18 snaps at 90.5 for making that play. PFF continue to grade it as long as the flag doesn't have an impact on the how the play continues. So I think that's just desserts, really, for Jason. He didn't have an especially good day at fullback, but he's a big contributor on special teams. So that's good for him. And I guess the other thing to say is that our kicker made the clutch kick at the end of the game and we didn't have any confidence in him whatsoever. So, great.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, when I heard that his longest field goal was 25 yards, I just thought, oh, man, he's going to miss this. You watch, like, it was just, I had no confidence in him. And he looks fucking massive. I thought I was big. Fucking hell. He looks huge, mate. He's like that Janikowski from the Raiders years ago. I thought we got him back or something, you know? Like, it was, yeah, I don't know. I don't know.
Dan on Twitch has just asked a kind of hard question considering I haven't watched the game back, but he's asking about Will Harris and what were his three worst plays in the game. I mean, I feel like one of the big plays downfield that was dropped by Hollywood Brown was on him, but I can't remember the exact play. I feel that the 4th and 19 was on him. A third play doesn't occur to me at the moment, but I feel like those two were bad enough, really. Either of you guys recall another bad Will Harris play?
Getting changed to come on the field. You know what I mean? Just stay in the locker room next time, mate.
That's just mean.
All right.
It is what it is. Right. So, boys, final reflections on this game in terms of how do you feel now? So we talked at the top of the show, Ryan Farden, about how we kind of felt coming out of it. The point was made that there's considerable game-on-game improvement. Obviously, the way that we lost is gutting. But with perhaps this team not thought of as being particularly good, potentially that, you know, at the end, the record's not going to be great. That, I mean, part of me woke up this morning thinking, well, we haven't harmed our draft position and the team looked really good. I feel kind of confident in the youth of this team and I'm looking forward to what's to come, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to remember that it's still a rebuild that has barely even got started. I mean, we're 3 games into a season when we you don't get it all fixed in one draft or one free agency. But, you know, I think we've shown over the first 3 games of the season that this is a fighting rebuild, if anything else. So, you know, this is a team that is definitely fighting. There's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, it's not going to go down easy and it's going to keep on, you know, punching above its weight all season long. So, you know, we come to play, we show up and you know, as long as we keep on doing that, you know, that's why you're going to keep, you know, having positive thoughts in terms of it. I was exactly so. I was as low as anything last night going to bed, but then woke up this morning and, you know, when things kind of take time to, you know, digest or whatever, it wasn't so bad. So, you know, there'll be games where it'll be rougher than that. You know, we'll probably get our asses handed to us on one or two occasions during the year. But, you know, there is still plenty to be happy about. And, you know, when you take a step back from it, you know, it's the attitude alone is what gets us through, I think, you know. And, you know, I'm sure most of us done our homework, you know, way back when we picked to be Detroit Lions fans, you know, we knew what we were signing up for. So, you know, we always, you know, hope that this team will get to the promised land one day, but we know that it's a fight and, you know, and another rebuild we're going through again. God knows how many we've gone through since we've been fans of the team, but, you know, I'm already looking forward to Sunday's game. And I think that that's something to say, you know, is when you're actually looking forward to the game, because I think that we're going to come again with the right attitude and the right fight. And, you know, it's going to be a bit of a bloodbath there in Chicago because there's 2 desperate teams there. But, you know, it's all right. You know, it's all been watchable. There's positives. There's obviously negatives, but it is a rebuild. And I think that, you know, they're going to work hard all week long again on the training field. They'll try and correct what they got wrong on Sunday. And I think you'll see a team of real fight and real determination and a team that will have a good shot of winning in Chicago. So I'm looking forward to it. And you're right. I think that, you know, there's a lot of positives to take when you take a step back from it all.
What about you, Ryan? How do you feel now?
Still upset that we didn't win. We should have. It was a game that we had to see out. I lost a lot of followers last night. I got into a few arguments because there's still those Lions fans that they won't take accountability. They just want to blame the officials. Like, I get the bad call. Also bad that got there, like you say. So I'm still miffed about a few things, but it's been and gone now. So it is what it is. Like, I'm not going to ponder on it anymore. I want to see them take out all their frustrations on whoever lines up at quarterback hands in there. That's where we'll see if we've actually learned anything. Like, when it comes to finishing games, like you say, how conservative, when to roll the dice, when not to roll the dice. Like, if we've learned anything, we'll hopefully see it on Sunday. This is a game I expect us to win. Like, from what I've seen now, like, put aside draft position, put aside progression, and it's fair every week. Chicago, I want to win. I don't care how bad we have to play to get it, because I just want to just have an inkling, because we have got some, toxic fans in this fan base, and they will turn on a dime. Like, I would just like someone to just give us something to smile about next Monday. That's all I ask for. I don't ask for a lot. It's simple things in life, being a Lions fan.
A good old-fashioned kind of, you know, typical black and blue kind of division game where, you know, if it's 3-6 to the Lions, I'll be happy with that. You know, just get that W, knock out Andy Dalton, whoever may be there. Go through all three of their quarterbacks and knock them out, because they're all a bit fragile. And just get a win, you know. And you know, I think it'll do wonders for the team. It really will. But, you know, talking about the Zebras again, let's be honest, that was 2 seconds late, that play snap, which would have pushed them back 5 yards. So they hit the bar, typical, you know, dramatic as always, going over. I thought it had bounced out from the camera.
Yeah, I did too.
I celebrated it. So, you know, you're like, oh, what the fuck? But, you know, it's, yes, you can't blame the rest for everything. You're 100% right. But you've got to take care of your own business. We all know that. But definitely a mistake. And the fact that the league haven't come out and said anything, I think just proves that they know they made a mistake and a cock up on it. But they feel that they can keep quiet because it's probably Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, I think the officiating for me, like the delay of game is here or there. You know, I know there's a degree of calls that don't get called there, but it's the false start for me that's far more egregious. Like, sometimes there's a twitch and it's very minor, and you see a guy coming across the line pointing at someone that forces the officials to throw the flag. But that one was a proper, like, I've had the falling dream in bed and I've shuddered awake. Like, that was a fucking fit on the line, and I don't understand how that wasn't called. For those guys who were saying about it being intentional grounding on Lamar's part, I just want to debunk that now, just take a little bit of time to describe the rules. So the guy has, I think it was on the Pride of Detroit Discord, and if you want to have a good chat, our Discord or Luke G's or Pride of Detroit are all very, very good. But on Pride of Detroit, someone was adamant that it was because there wasn't a receiver in the area. And I kind of went on about the fact that I thought that there was, and it went over his head. I was wrong. There was no receiver in the area. It was thrown pretty much effectively straight from the snap. But there is two legs to the intentional grounding rule. And the first leg is there must be imminent pressure from the defense, which causes the quarterback to be at risk of losing yards due to a sack. There was no pressure from the Lions D-line, and therefore Lamar was never at risk of losing yards, and therefore throwing it away from that position is absolutely fine. I do think the ball has to reach the line of scrimmage in either case, but obviously from that angle, that's not going to be a problem. So there was no grounding there. Of course, if there'd been a man in his face, it would have been a completely different story. So there's that. Right, enough on the Zebras. They'll do what they will. We need to beat them too. So, right. Any final thoughts before we sign off, boys?
No, just keep the faith, man. You know, to keep the faith.
So let's talk about the coaches actually quickly before we go. The halftime adjustments again seem to work quite well. How are you feeling about Glenn and Glynn? Sorry, Glenn and Lynn.
I like it. I mean, like I say, I'm surprised that they didn't call a pass play when we were going, down like with our final drive. I thought he might be a bit more aggressive there. But yeah, the adjustments on defense, I think, have been really good on the whole. I really like the defensive coordinator. I did actually think this, which is a little bit not really what you asked, but I thought this after the game yesterday that I was surprised that they give Campbell a 6-year deal and they gave the GM a 5-year deal.
Yeah, I think Campbell's has an exit clause after 3 years, but it's a 3-year deal, which is basically an option to extend for the team.
Right, okay, yeah. Because I was going to say that was a bit of a funny one, I thought myself. But yeah, no, listen, I mean, you know, I think that, you know, we're a weaker team than what we were last year, but we're playing a lot better and a lot harder. So that's how I would sum it up. I think we're doing more with less, but we haven't, we need that W. We definitely need that win on Sunday. Fuck me. I mean, we got our tongues hanging out for that one. We need one, and especially in Chicago. I want to win there because I've got a family that are Chicago Bears fans, and they're pretty convinced that I should have been a Bears fan. So fuck that. I've got to get a win against them.
What about you, Ryan? What do you think?
I was happy for 99% of, like, the coaching. Like, say, there was three players like that we were too conservative on, and I feel like they had a deciding factor. Like, say, with having Darren Fells and Hockenson, I would have taken a shot and tried to get a touchdown. Just one of them players, they were trying to milk the clock because we have those two tight ends, and that is the kind of area you want to work them in. And 4th and 19, I would have sent the house. I would have blitzed everyone, not gone too. We tried to just sit back and keep everyone in front of us and failed. I'd have rather emptied everyone and still given up the player, but at least we could have had some chance to get some pressure. They were those small conservative margins that we tried to protect the lead, and ultimately it probably playing our downfall. But we'll learn from that. Like, they can easily be amended. Like, they're the flip of a coin, aren't they, sometimes? So other than that, I was very happy with the performance. If we play like that next week, we will win.
I see the promise. Never throughout the Quinn Trisha era did I think I'm really impressed by what's happening. I just thought reluctantly, well, I'll trust them because I don't have any other choice. Whereas I'm buying into what's happening here. I actually am starting to really believe in what's happening. And we could go 1-16 here, and I'd be like, as long as we keep playing like this, I'm okay. You know, this regime is going to be winning people over or losing people in year two. I really believe that. Some people think it's a 2-year, 3-year, 4-year, 5-year rebuild. But I think you always give the first year as a pass on the whole, unless it looks like it's going wrong, looking at you and the Jets, the guy who we thought was coming here, Robert Saleh. I'm not convinced by him. There's a couple of other guys who are new first-year head coaches, David Culley at Houston. Sirianni surprised me and the Eagles because I think they look far more competent than I thought they would. But I believe in this stuff. I do. I'm going to say it loud and proud until I have a reason not to.
Yeah. I think that what is as well is that I've just lost my train of thought here. I think it's that if we've lost three games here at the end of the day, but
yeah,
if we continue to lose, and I think you're saying this, if we kind of continue to lose with these sort of performances, with this kind of effort, and with this, in a way, a bit of an identity of fighting and being aggressive and, you know, not giving in, then yeah. But if it starts to turn ugly and we don't play well and we don't look good and our performances, aren't up to scratch, then it will turn putrid, as it always seems to do in Detroit. But while this fight and this effort's there in the squad, then yes, I'm happy with it. And I'm liking definitely, into your original answer, what I'm seeing from a question from what I'm seeing from the OC and the DC, most definitely. And, you know, even from Campbell, there's been some, you know, there's been some good balls. You know, he's got, I think he's got every challenge right so far. I mean, okay, they probably haven't been the hardest ones to win, but, you know, at least he's getting that sort of part of his game right. Made a mistake, I think, we're calling the four, the timeout. But, you know, if everyone was on the same wavelength, we would have made the stop on 4 for 19. So, you know, it's just one of those things. When you're going through hell, you just got to keep on going.
Yep, that's fair. Right, I'm going to sign this off. So next episode is going to be on Thursday, 30th September, Lions at Bears preview show. The next episode of the podcast, though, is on Wednesday. It's the Royal Lions College Football Podcast Week 4 review. What did you see from this weekend, Ryan, that you liked? Were there any games that stood out to you? There were a few big upsets, weren't there?
Yeah, there were some huge upsets. Like, there's some teams, like I say, that were coming in and they were embarrassed, licking their wounds. Like I say, there's some shake-up as well. Like, so yeah, the top 10 rankings, a giant has fallen. Like I say, David won, like I say, with a clean shot to the head. So we'll break it all down, like I say. But
you're referring to Clemson there?
I am. No one likes them, and they finally got their just desserts.
Excellent. Well, look forward to hearing that Wednesday or Thursday, whenever that drops, recording on Wednesday. Don't forget to hit us up on Discord. We're actually starting to build a really nice community of people there. And if you want to be a part of it, you can DM us on Twitter and I'll send you the message over to join us there. Got really active during game day, but outside of game day, actually, it's a vibrant place. So do join us for that. You can also find us on the rest of our socials on Royal Lions UK on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We also run a Facebook group via the chairman, Ryan Fard. It's called Detroit Lions Fans UK One Pride Worldwide. Also got a couple of articles coming up on RoyalTheLionsUK.com. Don't forget to subscribe and rate us 5 stars on your podcast provider. Just remains to me to thank my co-host, Ryan Fard, and Ryan McCluskey. I'm Matthew Turner, and we'll see you later this week for the next edition of the podcast. Let's go, Lions. One Pride.
One Pride.
Right.